Mini episode 1823 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1823. You've got with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu. And today it is Ben Chu in his role as FDH Hoops analyst. We've had him on a couple times recently to talk TV shows. We will again shortly, spoiler alert. But today, it's what's Ben's core role over the years been with FDH? That has been NBA analyst, and we have the 2024-2025 NBA playoffs starting this week, first with the play-in games, then the actual playoff games starting on Saturday. So a fascinating time of year. The off-season starts, of course, today, Monday, as we are taping this for the teams that aren't in the postseason. So a lot to talk about, Ben, a lot to break down, and again, a big news day on Monday.
Justice for a porn child. Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
No, but it's an interesting day, and I know we're going to touch on the movement earlier today in the NBA.
Yeah, Coach Bud gets a cap busted in him in Phoenix. Hashtag who saw that coming. I mean, that was a thing where I didn't know why he took that job in the first place, to be brutally honest with you, because as you're looking here, like, he was really set up for failure with the roster that they had, and their coach, who's just, or their owner, I should say, who's just a flat-out Dan Gilbert wannabe. He has never mastered the whole part of ownership, as far as you got to be willing to do more than throw money around, as Dan Gilbert has done. You have to be able to spend it efficiently, and Phoenix is just sort of the poster child at this point in time. Perhaps Philadelphia as well, when you're looking at the teams that were in win now mode, that were just furiously incapable of doing so this year. The head coach is the scapegoat. And again, I don't know that anybody could have dragged more wins out of this team this year. They had some improvements from last year. Ryan Dunn came in and helped them. I mean, actually getting a scintilla of legitimate point guard play on the roster, but a mismatched, aging, overpaid roster. You get what you get. And Coach Bud, he'll be back on the job market a year older and richer, but tarnished by the experience in Phoenix, however unfairly.
Right. And I mean, it's a tough scenario for any head coach, but I think perceptionally we all saw too, Rick, that this job was relatively coveted in the offseason because you had a team of Durant, Beal, and Devin Booker. And it just, during the season, never really seemed to mesh. I know Coach Bud, and we've had our discussions about him. I think he's a pretty good to great head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also when the pieces fall into place. And I feel like there are head coaches we've seen in the league where if they have a ready-made champion, they can get them to win. And there are coaches who have the pieces, but they can't do anything with them. And again, I don't really fully blame Coach Mike Budenholzer in this case. Phoenix had been up and down. I mean, they started out relatively hot. They're one of the few teams in NBA history that started out 8-2 and didn't make even the play-in tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a tough scenario. I know Matty Shiba, their owner, was trying to do win now, and I get that because we've seen it work before, but it's tough. It feels like they're in a complete rebuild mode. I would not be shocked to see both Booker or Durant traded in the offseason. Just load us up, start from the beginning. But this may be a cautionary tale for any future NBA owner to consider what your roster construction is right now and not try to go all in necessarily. And I get though, because most of these owners who are coming into the league have been successful in business. So in most cases, when you're successful in business, the logic usually is that you try to do as many things early on to make it as profitable and as successful as possible. But I don't think that's how you do it in today's NBA.
That is not how you do it. And again, we could see a little bit of a throwback to 2 years ago here. Yeah, if Booker and Durant, who will both bring you some assets, can be unloaded, Booker especially because of his younger age, then basically Bradley Beal is going to be back in the same circumstance that he escaped in Washington, but he's going to be 2 years older, right. Albeit.
And I mean, one thing we also need to know too, Rick, like this is the first time, unless I'm mistaken, in NBA history where an ownership group has come in and fired three head coaches in three consecutive years.
I think so. I think that is the case. And so ultimately it is a deal that you look at it and it's going to be, I don't know how coveted it's going to be this offseason. My guess is it ends up being a first time coach who is just eager to get a job somewhere. And it will be very interesting to see, because if they get a first time head coach, it'll show you that ownership is starting to finally get realistic and realize that this is a rebuilding situation.
And it's also going to come down to Devin Booker. His opinion on
how
the situation.
Yeah. So you got that happening. And then also today, and this is one that hurts my Cavs fan heart, because he will always have a soft spot in my heart for 2016. David Griffin getting busted out as a general manager in New Orleans. And again, that was a roster that had a lot of weird fits over the years. And something that I think I'd remarked on the show, I know I'd said it to you off air, but that was always a thing where he said when he took the job there, and this caused a lot of heat with LeBron because LeBron took it like, oh, you're saying you didn't like working with me. But Griff said, well, you know, taking a team that was very, very good and helping to make them great and a champion, I'd rather rebuild from scratch. I'm the kind of guy that likes to be a builder rather than a guy that takes a team over the top. And I've said to you over a period of time, but it looks like his skill set is be a guy that takes a team over the top, right? Because this was his chance to sort of build, and looks, injuries to Zion and everything else that went that way. But if we just look at the bottom line of the man's resume, 0-1 in New Orleans, 1-1 in Cleveland, this is a thing where I hope that there are owners that have enough nuance to look at this. And if there's a team that's out there, maybe even Denver, let's say, Denver being a team that's going to be in the market for a GM here, I'd like to see him go to a place of a team that is trying to take those final steps to get over the hump, as Denver would be again, rather than a rebuilding situation, because whether he likes it or not, his skill set is in helping a team to get over the hump and make those moves. The man was an absolute magician with the salary cap in Cleveland. The maneuverings that he had to do to get guys in here in the LeBron years part two was just incredible. So I wish the best for Griff somewhere else, and I think that's the circumstance where it would work for him, whether that's what he likes or not.
And I mean, the issue with just New Orleans in the most recent era, like, Zion had multiple injuries. Let's not forget too, CJ McCollum was out for a period of time. DeJounte Murray in his first full season didn't play past 60 games. So What are you going to do in that situation? And again, the weird irony of it is that Griff actually did a relatively good job of drafting good players. It's just they're not with the team anymore. Dyson Daniels is flourishing right now with the Atlanta Hawks, and Jackson Hayes is playing really well with the Lakers. So It was a really weird mismatched team, and the discussion was who was the one, and we all perceived Zion was the one, but it's always hard in the NBA when you have a very young number one player who isn't around to play most games, how you're really truly building. And I guess you would say at the end they grifted a good job of what he was able to do, but again, it's New Orleans. It's not a major market in the NBA at this period of time. As much as we like to say, like, in the NBA, it's like they're a notable franchise, like that is Saints country more than anything else. So
it is
going to be a little bit harder to get free agents to go there, but I mean, and we see what has essentially happened to is, like, under Chris Tutelich, Trajan Langdon has been doing fantastic with the Pistons this year. But again, it's one of those weird timelines where he was brought in to help build the Zion core and it just never really panned itself out despite his best efforts.
Yeah, it didn't work out. And again, some of that was luck with Zion's injuries and everything. But when you look at this year, the commonality of the two moves today. So New Orleans, they were a team that was more so on the periphery, I think, of the West playoff picture, even if Zion was healthy. So they're not as big of a surprise as Phoenix as far as missing it altogether. But both of them would qualify to some degree as being surprises here. And you and I talked about this in our preseason preview. We accurately predicted in looking at this here, when you looked at the aging teams in the West, teams that still had a lot of talent, but we're getting up there in years, whether it be Phoenix, whether it be the Lakers, whether it be Golden State, one of these teams here was going to miss the playoffs altogether if anybody jumped up, if San Antonio did, if Houston did what Oklahoma City did a year ago and made a big leap. Lo and behold, Houston makes that leap, not to the one seed, but to the two. That pushes somebody back down the pile here, and that somebody ultimately was Phoenix. New Orleans wasn't going to make it anyways, but that's a situation here where, again, this is something I think as we start to get into the playoff preview, we're going to be talking about here, that something that's really been happening a lot over the course of the last year, and I think the way that Minnesota went through the playoffs last year to the Western Conference Finals, taking out Denver on the way to the Western Conference Finals, this is a league where way more than we're used to seeing it, because you, like me, are a big basketball historian, Ben Chu, way more than we're used to seeing it, it's a situation where the future is now. And we're just not used to that being the case. And that's why some of these owners are still in this dinosaur mode of, let's build a super team. But the young teams are getting really good faster than they almost generally ever have in the NBA, it seems like.
Right. And I mean, obviously, it's pace of play. If you have a younger team, you can go a little bit deeper. And
true. Yes, that helps.
And on top of that, too, we've discussed this, too, Rick, is that we see this like almost every roughly, I would say, 6 to 8 years in the NBA where we evolve offensively and defensively just mm-hmm. as a league. And what ends up happening is when you see these teams that can go 8, 9, 10 deep, like, well, you're not predicated on your superstars now. Like, sure, your superstars can get you a big three can get you 90 points. But if we're in a timeline where you need to score 125 to win a basketball game and you mm-hmm. don't have that bench, it's a completely different league. And we saw what essentially happened earlier in the season with the Cavs and with Golden State running deeper rotations. And we've discussed this too off air with like Thibodeau's considerations in terms of his rotations and with the Timberwolves and with Knicks about how having a fresher team later going into the playoffs might be a better thing than a worse thing. Mm-hmm. And it's also just, we see this too. It's just, it's cyclical in sports, and you can go and look at any professional sport or even minor league sport. Every 6 to 8 years, younger players get better and they can put themselves in the scenario to win a championship.
Yep. That's what's happening. And this is something that you will see illustrated here as I go to share this here. With the ultimately, every time around here, we end up going to the FDH end of regular season breakdown. We actually do these breakdowns at a couple of different points here during the season. And this is one where when we do it at the end of the season, I'm going to bring this one up here now so we can see this. And you see there that, again, Cleveland and Oklahoma City comprising the top tier of teams in the league. So this statistical index that we have, it takes the final FDH power rankings. From there, the SRS, offensive rating, defensive rating, EFG, TS percentage, assist to turnover ratio, 3-point percentage, and margin of victory. And basically, you just kind of put those all in a blender and see what it spits out. And ultimately, you've got Cleveland and Oklahoma City on the top tier by themselves in that order, Boston on the second tier by themselves. And then from there, this is where a little bit you start to see in terms of how this ends up being a deal where it's a little bit, in some cases, you have to know how to apply this as far as taking it literally or not, of a backwards looking kind of statistics here, because Denver is in fourth place at the top of the third tier. But if they were really going great guns, they wouldn't have just blown out their coach and GM in the last week or so. Albeit they are 22nd in defensive rating. So even if it's a bit of a lagging indicator, it does show how much they have sucked on defense. Conversely, the LA Lakers only 11th on this. But again, that doesn't capture how good they've been post Luka trade. So we have that and also playoff predictions here, which we will get to as we're going through. But in the Eastern Conference, this is something where I think the overall picture of this is probably not going to take us too long to get through, because I would say, Ben, that when you go to look at it here, You have a situation where you would have thought at the beginning of the year that if it was Cleveland, Boston, New York, that perhaps it would be. And again, maybe there was the chance of Milwaukee looking a little bit better than they have overall, or maybe Indiana taking another step forward. But you would have thought to yourself, gee, I'd rather be the team that doesn't have to play both of these teams on a route to the NBA Finals versus me as a Cavs fan right now. I'm just sitting here like, well, I don't know that Boston's going to break much of a sweat with the Knicks based on the way that they have really matched up poorly against the top level teams in the league here. And this being a team that previously being built on defense and depth, Tibbs has done what he is want to do, shrink the rotation because they had to give up some of that depth to get a little bit top heavier and get a Karl Anthony Towns, for example. And this is a thing where, again, he's running his starters absolutely ragged. Now, you've said previously, and I think this is right, that Boston themselves potentially could have depth issues. Those I don't think will come into play against the Knicks. Those I think could very well come into play against the Cavs because I don't think anybody's got deeper, effective depth than the Cavs. But a series like that, at the beginning of the year as a Cavs fan, I'd have been licking my chops like, oh, Boston's got to go through New York. And now it's like, yawn, Boston's got to go through New York.
And I mean, one thing we do also have to just be intellectually honest about too is like the Knicks have had their injury problems during the
season.
So Brunson was out for an extended period of time. Towns been out for an extended period of time. So we truly don't know, but I do agree at the end there, Rick, is when you go against some of the top teams in the East and West and you go 0-12, that's not a good sign for your playoff hopes at this point. But the thing too is that, and again, and we've seen this happen too in the league, like it sometimes takes time for big guys to assimilate with their own teams, and like Towns will probably have an opportunity to play a little bit more. I would like to say out of courtesy to the Knicks, it's not a great first-round matchup against Detroit. They played them relatively close, a couple games they played this season. So if I was a Knicks fan, I would be almost hoping that we got an easier first-round matchup to set us up for a second round against Boston. But I don't think that's going to be the case unless Detroit completely implodes. But again, it's not surprising. Like earlier in the season, we were talking about the core four teams at the top were Cleveland, Boston, Philly, and New York. Philly kind of imploded, and then the Bucks had Dame's issues over the periods of last couple of months.
Yeah,
but they're looking like an interesting team, and Indiana's now catching their stride at the end of the regular season. So it's not a guarantee, but again, I've said this to analysts and other people offer, like, I would personally be very shocked if it's not a Cavs Celtics Eastern Conference Finals. But again, there's anyone can muck it up at any period of time because this is today's NBA, and we see big leads dissipate over small periods of time, and we've seen situations happen. Any team in the East right now is one injury away from changing the course of their playoff run. So
true,
we will have to see what ends up happening, but at least for the Knicks right now, they're just, again, like you said, they're struggling with depth, and they're struggling with having to play heavy minutes in the regular season. And in the first round of playoffs, I don't think that matters, but we saw going into last season, it does matter in the second round.
Yeah, it does. And I will say, too, I think a real punk move at Little Caesars Arena, that they're trying to do the geofencing on tickets. We're not going to sell to anybody outside Michigan so we can keep our home court advantage for the home games. So Detroit getting a little bit desperate in that regard, I think. But, I mean, it's a situation where, again, I you look at what the Knicks did to, ironically, the J.B. Bickerstaff-led Cavs 2 years ago, and it seems – you know, far-fetched looking back on the history of that I would potentially be licking my chops at the thing of like, oh, maybe they could take out Boston. Now, I don't think that they can, but boy, that would be nice because I think the Cavs can get past Boston. I know the Cavs can get past the Knicks based on what we've seen of them this year. And this is a thing where, too, in terms of making their team a little bit more top-heavy with getting Towns in there, I wonder if that's one of the things where the Knicks may not, when we talk about somebody like Phoenix and Philadelphia, they're really out of step with the way that the league's going. Hey, let's load up on aging stars to try to put together a super team. I wonder if the notion of like trying to crown your talent a little bit more, like let's maybe risk getting a little more top heavy to try to get over the top. I wonder if that's not flying in the face of trends here too, what the Knicks are doing. I mean, you look at it and like, are they better off with Towns, or were they better off with some of the options that they had with Towns not there when they had Randall, when he was healthy at least, and DiVincenzo? And it's a question at least worth asking.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see, at least in this level of playoffs, if that move ultimately ends up working or not. And again, the question this entire season has been about depth. And then as we know, once we get to the playoffs, rotations will shrink. That's just how it is. But it's going to be really intriguing to see, at least for the Knicks, is that we've seen it too so far with Karl Anthony Towns' career in Minnesota. They did not get past the Western Conference Finals with him. So it's a major question. And again, too, like we've discussed this too, is with there's a perception around the league, especially a lot of teams, like you need superstars to win. And that is always the case. What I'd also say too is like collecting as many all-stars as possible doesn't necessarily guarantee you anything. We saw what happened this year in Phoenix and subsequently with other teams trying to build these super team rosters.
Yeah, I mean, it is very interesting. Certainly, the acceleration of the trends in the league towards offensive explosiveness, when you're looking at teams like Indiana and Milwaukee, that's what they're going to be predicated on as far as their, I would say, long shot hopes of making it at least as far as the Eastern Conference Finals. Two teams that are basically sort of mid defensively, but Milwaukee third in the league in EFG, Indiana is fourth. Milwaukee third in the TS percentage and Indiana fifth. So when you look at some of the offensive numbers there, and then you move to the 3-point percentage, Milwaukee first, Indiana eighth. So those are teams that, again, they are really kind of in tune with the trends of the way that the league is progressing right now, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to be enough based on the Cavs roster and the Celtics roster, ironically, which are different ways of constructing rosters, diametrically differently in some ways between the Cavs and the Celtics. But nevertheless, they seem like they're closer to the zeitgeist of where the league is at right now. And Indiana and Milwaukee, notwithstanding having that offensive punch, they're just going to go out there and try and win shootouts, I guess.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's part of it. Obviously, Milwaukee's whole scenario is going to revolve around Giannis. And after a period of time, after we all saw Dame had to go on the injured reserve due to all the blood clot situation, like, there was a discussion at one point where a lot of people were like, are the Bucks going to even fall backwards into some of these lower seeds? And they've been able to keep pace, obviously, when your favorite dudes over time, like Kevin Porter Jr., has played relatively well, and they still got a lot of good shooting. And if Giannis can be prime Shaq, they definitely have a chance to win some playoff series. It's just, again, the tough part for them is that they are matched up at the four or five spot with a team that pushes the pace like Indiana does. So they're not really favored in that respect. It's just going to be, if I had to guess at this point, a hard fought 7-game series, and then they're going to have to face a Cleveland team that will probably have some level of rest. Or even if there is an upset, Rick, there some team, whoever is in the 1-8 spot at that point, will have some rest in comparison to a 7-game series of hard-fought games.
Yes. And I definitely think in looking at this, Milwaukee, Indiana looks set to go 7. And I am delighted as a Cavs fan with that being the case. You know, may it be a 188 to 187 quintuple overtime game 7. You know, we should be so lucky. But I just think in looking at this here, Cleveland matching up with Boston, as we both think will happen in the and I think most people think will happen in the Eastern Conference Finals. I have said all along, I think that it's outstanding that the Cavs end up getting a one seed because they needed it worse. This is a thing where, again, they're the team that has something to prove. Boston doesn't. I think that it's huge, and I think that the Cavs have to win game one. I think it gets to be very, very difficult because then that makes game two a must win if they don't.
And I think the real question, too, is that with essentially the timeline with the Cavs games against Boston this season, is that if Cleveland tends to jump out early and play really well, that's usually their specific part in terms of building a good lead so that they can finish the game at the end. And it's going to just be a really interesting situation with Cleveland and Boston. It feels like to me that they essentially split the regular season. There were times where Cleveland, essentially Boston, snapped Cleveland's long winning streak. And it's essentially the question of Cleveland's depth with guys like Sam Merrill, guys like Ty Jerome, guys like, you know,
Strus,
yeah. It's going to be Cleveland's depth versus essentially Boston's big three of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Kristaps Porzingis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be really interesting because there have been some points in the regular season where Boston has looked completely unbeatable. They've just looked like exactly the champion we saw last season. But then we also saw that stretch where they went essentially, they lost like 7 to 11 games, and they did not look great. Mm-hmm. And now they're sort of catching their stride. And they have a guy who's going to be talked about similar to Ty Jerome and Peyton Pritchard, who could be a sixth man of the year candidate, probably is going to win the award. It's just, it feels like on paper that's a 6 to 7 game series, no matter how you slice it, barring an injury. But we'll see. Again, I feel like, and we talk about this for every NBA playoff run, the easier the road usually tends to help you get and win an NBA championship. And I feel like, in comparison with this season from the Eastern to Western Conference, it feels like the Eastern Conference is a much simpler road at this time.
Absolutely, yeah, because the top two seeds, again, it would be a massive, massive choke if either of them went out in either of the first two rounds. I mean, they're going to be overwhelming favorites, as well they should. Two things that are kind of come into play here for the Cavs, and where I think it's a 51-49, 52-48% calculus either way. Of where I give the slight lean towards the Cavs on this one, because they address both of these things here. Number one, and for as much as I've joked about this self-deprecatingly, the talk in Cleveland the last couple of years of like, when is Mobley going to make the leap? Brother, he's made the leap this year. He is becoming the evolutionary version of Evan Mobley that everybody's been looking to see, complete with becoming a legitimate three-point threat and a legitimate secondary playmaker. The other thing being, people have been saying for some point in time, and I don't know that I felt the urgency as much as a lot of people did, but now that they've addressed it, I do see where it helps. The whole thing of like, get a big wing. I thought they could have been okay with Strus at the three, Dean Wade, if he stays healthy. Okoro, I think you still don't want to trust him that much in the playoffs because his shot kind of deserts him. But getting DeAndre Hunter, I was happy when they did it because it was like, okay, they were able to do it at a price that wasn't prohibitive. And now that I see what they're like with him in there, I see what it is. And it's a thing where for as much as people were saying, oh, try and get a backup big on the buyout market, and it ended up not happening. But they got a couple of guys in there that I think can be good space fillers. And again, if Dean Wade stays healthy, God willing, again, because the Cavs, it's one of the funniest things in the league. I mean, CBS Sports did a great article on this a couple weeks back. I mean, they've been almost unbeatable even before this season when Dean Wade was in the lineup. Keep in mind, he missed the playoffs the last 2 years. So there's just something about this guy. And I guess it's not a huge mystery. He's a stretch four. His footwork is excellent. He's an excellent perimeter defender. Again, if Dean Wade is healthy, that is something where the Cavs statistically are just about unbeatable. And it's one of the weirdest things when you tell that to people, that like, this guy, they have this kind of a record when he's in there. But, you know, yeah, that's the kind of super role player that you need there. So there's some things about the Cavs in terms of where they've done everything that they needed to do. And let's go back to Kenny Atkinson being hired as head coach at the beginning of the year anyways, because that's the thing that set all of this in motion. This offense that's based on so much cutting and movement and everything like that, and people comparing, and I think justifiably so, him coming in and the effect that this could have on the league as far as interjecting, cutting into the offense the way that they do a lot more, as well as depth. And now you have to have a legitimate roster where you can play a bunch more guys, but like the adjustments that he's made with this team, a lot of people are comparing to what Steve Kerr did in 2014, 2015 with Golden State. I think it's justified, and I think it leads to a finals appearance the same as Kerr got in his first year.
And again, it's really not surprising because Atkinson was an assistant coach in Golden State in that exact timeline. So,
yep.
Again, we have to go on record that I was a little bit less skeptical of the Kenny Atkinson coaching hire than you were. Just got to put that on the note.
You called it
the docket.
I was like, I hope it'll work.
Yeah. Like, in my opinion, in that series, it's going to really come down to Cleveland's level of success in the regular season and porting it over into the playoffs, as Boston has already won a title with this group. And again, like we said, it's going to come down to depth. If Cleveland's depth shows up in the playoffs, they should be able to win a series against Boston. If they don't show up, Boston has the horses and the team to definitely get back to an NBA Finals for sure.
I think that's it. I agree with you completely. I mean, if my boy slinging Sammy Merrill is knocking them down, we go into the finals, baby. I mean, it's one of those things where, it's the depth has to show up here. Again, the starters will as well. I'm confident of that. I'm confident that Mitchell's going to show up. Garland has had a rough time in the playoffs the last 2 years or so. He was hurt last year, so that was part of it as well. He was never at full strength the second half of the season. Mobley haven't taken the leap that he has. Mobley and Allen still being the great defensive duo down low. So that's what Cavs
were. I don't mean to interrupt too, Rick, but we do have to know that last season there were injury issues with Cleveland as well.
Clearly, yes. And that was
I'm not being an apologist, but what I'm saying is, like, you have to be realistic. There was no Allen and there was no Mitchell for a percentage of that series.
Right. And that's like, and look, I mean, I'd love to say otherwise, but the Cavs weren't winning that series, I think, even at full strength, because for as much as I was a proponent of giving J.B. Bickerstaff a chance last year, I think it basically proved that they kind of topped out where they were at. And it was funny that you get a lot of this surface level commentary from some of the media of like, how do you fire a guy who's taking the Cavs? And it's just like, and I get some of that, but there's the whole thing of, you know, the late, great Marty Schottenheimer also in Cleveland. It's a thing of like, some coaches can take you from the dregs and take you so far, and that's about it. Now, we'll see. It would be unfortunate for me as a Cavs fan if he helps establish Detroit as a legitimate championship contender in the years to come. They certainly have a cornerstone type player in Cade Cunningham there, a guy that I compared when he came out to basically sort of another Luka, and you're kind of seeing that this year stylistically in his game. So maybe Bickerstaff will transcend that at some point. But Kenny Atkinson, what he's done, and I've joked about this off air, that if the Cavs, and this is predicated on the Cavs winning more than one title in the next couple of years, but the guy that knocked down the shot that won the 2016 championship, Kyrie Irving, he may have made a bigger contribution to the city of Cleveland in the years after he left Cleveland, because being part of the mutiny that ran Kenny Atkinson out of Brooklyn and making him available to the Cavs, I mean, Kyrie Irving still paying dividends in this town years after he played here. Thank you, Kyrie.
I mean, my thing, too, is that you also have to look, if you look past that, even with this Cleveland roster, is that, again, the big thing that we saw over the last few seasons is that Mobley and Allen need to show up in the playoffs. And, again, it's unfair to cast them as the two that have to show up, but they really do, like, I think perimeter-wise, I think we're expecting Garland to play well. We're expecting Mitchell to play well. There are other guys are going to say, like, it's going to come down to can Mobley and Allen help shut down Kristaps Porzingis if they get to an Eastern Conference Finals? Because it feels like that's the one guy who helps unlock Boston more than any player on that team currently.
Yeah, and having the you know, there's a number of nicknames in town here, you know, whether it be the Terminal Towers or whatever, having those guys down low – that's what gives you faith and confidence as a Cavs fan when you're dealing with opposing big men and how they're going to match up. So it's an Eastern Conference that seems pretty cut and dried heading up to the conference finals. In the West, you could potentially say that, because I know you and you were looking at it like Oklahoma City and the Lakers being the most likely to make it there. But there's teams that you could take out sort of by process of elimination. Denver, I don't even have them making it out of the first round, based on this whole disastrous experiment that they're going with here of, you know, hitting the reset button with three games to go in the season. Nor do I necessarily see the Clippers making it that far, notwithstanding my regard for Ty Lue and everything, because again, how long is Leonard going to hold up? That's the perennial kind of question with the Clippers. And I think it's actually been years since he's been able to make any kind of an impact there. Much to my delight as a hater, Golden State missing the playoffs altogether, having to be in the play-in. I do think they'll make the playoffs, but this is just something that's going to complicate their path. You've got a very talented Houston team, but is it too much too soon to expect them to go anywhere? Spoiler alert, yes, I think it is. You've got a Minnesota team that, by the way, looking at this here on our breakdown, I had commented to you off air yesterday, and you said Minnesota lost a lot of close games, and it does kind of tend to bear out here. But Minnesota is a statistical darling, notwithstanding the fact that in some ways you could look at their regular season as being a bit disappointing coming off of last year's conference finals. But statistically, they've been every bit as good as they were a year ago. So it's a fascinating Western Conference, because I do agree with you. I think OKC and the Lakers, I think they are fated for that matchup in the conference finals. But unlike the East, there's a plethora of teams that could play spoiler along the way.
Right. And I mean, you, at this point too, can you really, if Golden State gets the seventh seed against Houston, can you, the seventh seed to face Houston in the first round, can you really count them out for making a deep run at this time? But again, it feels like we're in a collision course for OKC and the Lakers, unless something else happens otherwise. I would say the biggest thing that could prevent that would obviously be the Clippers. They're one of the hottest teams in the NBA right now, won 10 of their last 12. Kawhi's been fantastic. You know, Zubac is, if it wasn't for a year with Draymond and Mobley getting talked about as defensive player of the year, he has put together a fantastic defensive season. And, you know, they're a deep team too. You got Norman Powell on that team, Derrick Jones Jr., and you have Ty Lue, as you mentioned, is one of the better coaches in the NBA. And then even on the tail end teams at the bottom half, Memphis is still around. They could cause some problems. Again, I don't think against Oklahoma City, because they played relatively well throughout. But if they were able to potentially get in as a seven, I could totally see a scenario where Memphis could pull off an upset against Houston in the first round. And then you even look at like the 9 and 10 seeds of like Sacramento and Dallas. Like, I don't think either of them are going to make any noise, but Sacramento's played relatively well as of late as well. And, you know, I can't fully say with an Oklahoma City team who has been dominant and had arguably, we have to note this, one of the top five best seasons in NBA history, that we're fully confirmed that they can do well in the playoffs, because they so far haven't, but they haven't gone out the first round in the last 3 years. So,
yeah.
Could a Sacramento team with Zach LaVine, who's one of the best pure scorers in the NBA, DeMar DeRozan, Domantas Sabonis, if they get the 8th seed, could make that series initially a little more interesting at that period of time. But again, it feels like it's going to be OKC and the Lakers unless someone changes that or changes that entire scenario. But again, it's going to just be a dogfight. We'll see what ends up happening. It's one of the most weird Western conferences we've had. Because normally it was like, well, the West is obviously better than the Eastern Conference, but this is one of the first times we saw, like, from 3 to 8, like, a difference of 2 games or less. It's just absolutely crazy. And we'll see it maybe in the future, but I don't think we'll see it at the scale of literally 5 teams on the final day of the regular season were fighting to not be in the play-in tournament.
Well, and you're looking at a scenario, too, where, and I was joking with you off-air about this, that, like, if you would have said at the beginning of the year, you're going to have this – basically this big, you know, pile up in the middle of the Western Conference, Houston's going to be on one side of it, the high end or the low end, who would have bet on them being on the high end? But yeah, they were locked into being the 2 seed. That's the kind of leap that they made. They have, of course, a huge burden of proof as far as what they're going to be able to do in the postseason. And again, they were not statistical darlings, actually, when you look at this year. 23rd in the league in EFG, 24th in TS percentage. Not surprising, those two kind of tend to go hand in hand an awful lot. 24th in assist to turnover ratio, 21st in 3-point percentage. So Houston's got a lot to prove along the way. And to what you said before, yes, I would note kind of glumly that I would actually pick Golden State to beat them in the first round advance to what the TV networks will call a dream matchup with LeBron, Luka, and the Lakers. But, the Western Conference, there are a lot more teams that could prevent the seemingly inevitable matchup that we have in the Eastern Conference Finals in the Western Conference. But as far as how Oklahoma City and the Lakers would match up, I mean, it's sort of opposites in the one sense, because for Oklahoma City, and again, fifth in the league in three-point shooting, but you know, you don't tend to think of them as being a team that's really, really deep in terms of gunners, basically. Conversely, they are a team at the four and the five here with Holmgren and Hartenstein, where they've got more down low than what the Lakers have. That's for darn sure, because you know they've been able to make some things work. You mentioned about Hayes before. I mean, there's been some guys that they've been able to make work, you know, in the pivot here. But the Lakers have become, to this point, a largely sort of perimeter-oriented team with LeBron, with Luka. The strength of the team from there is basically Austin Reeves. To a certain extent, my guy from Tennessee, Dalton Connect, with what he's able to bring you off the bench. So it would be a matchup of real opposites in terms of the Lakers and the Thunder in the conference finals here, with the biggest thumb on the scale being basically the experience factor that LeBron brings and some of the veteran players on the Lakers, and another chance for Luka to match up with OKC in the postseason.
Right, and one of the big points that I know even some Oklahoma City. There we go. I can say that with those words today. Oklahoma City Thunder fans is also
even. It sticks in your throat as a Sonics fan.
Yeah. But I would like to say, too, is like Oklahoma City, like currently their best, the best part of, they're one of the top defensive teams in the league. Their perimeter defense is a
monsters. Monsters.
Multiple times in the regular season against Cleveland and other teams where they'll just be able to lock up individually, lock up defensively.
Yeah.
But the thing is that is the strength of the Lakers, of LeBron James and Luka Doncic. And let's just be honest at the end of the day. Are we really going to be in a scenario, regardless of how great this Oklahoma City team is, are we really going to count out a team of LeBron James and Luka Doncic on the same roster is not going to get to an NBA Finals? I hate to say it, but it's more just like it feels very obvious that if the Lakers are in a position to get to the finals, that they will probably get the benefit of the doubt, at least for this season.
Well, I mean, not to be too cynical, but I will. They'll get the benefit of the doubt from the whistles. Ain't no denying who the league office wants to see there in that matchup, which I would say, from my perspective as a Cavs fan, actually kind of works better, because my biggest fear with the Cavs in the NBA Finals would probably be Oklahoma City with that defense. You know, Lou Dort on down, the way that they can lock you up. And basically, I mean, this Cavs team offensively is just splendid. It is an offensive masterpiece. But if there's any team that can muddy it up, drag it into the mud pit, it would be Oklahoma City with their defense.
Right.
As opposed to the Lakers being the top-heavy team that they are. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because you go back to the 2016 NBA Finals, Game 6, the 40-40 game with LeBron and Kyrie. I would say that whoever the Lakers are playing in the Finals, I think you could see that three times, four times between LeBron and Luka, but I think that might be symptomatic of the limitations of that team. That you could have two guys just going and having huge performances, but I think it would be a matter of, would it be enough to mask what the rest of their team is doing? I think with a team like the Cavs, with the depth, that would be the kryptonite. That would be the sense that I have. So when you were able to talk me into your perspective that the Lakers would actually be probably justifiably the favorites against Oklahoma City, that was the thing to put the biggest smile on my face, because I'll take my chances, even with two all-time greats, I'll take my chances rather than going into, you know, that basically that Punjabi prison of having to play Oklahoma City with the big, you know, long-limbed lockdown guys. No, thank you.
And I feel like the one thing with OKC, and this is going to be their key to winning and getting to the NBA Finals, is that we know Shea is an MVP candidate. He's a fantastic player. But one of the things I've been harping on for this run for the Thunder is that they do not have consistent secondary scoring. And once we get to the playoffs, Shea can only do so much. And it's going to come down to guys like Jalen Williams, Isaiah Hartenstein, Chet Holmgren to provide that additional scoring punch. Because if you look at a lot of the losses that the Thunder have had this season, it's against high-level playoff teams where the rest of their supporting cast has not played well. Mm-hmm. So if they can consistently put together timelines where Shea can get 35-40 and the rest of the team can input about 80 to 90 points. They're home free. They're easily going to make it to the NBA Finals. But I'm just skeptical because we've never seen it at this point, Rick, where an NBA Finals contender does not have a legitimate secondary scorer.
Yeah, that's
again,
true.
Jalen Williams is at, I'm going to say this, Jalen Williams is as close as I've seen it right now in OKC.
Okay.
But we still need the proof in the pudding at the end of the day. You still need to see. And again, I'm only being critical of OKC is because they've had arguably one of the greatest seasons in NBA history.
Sure.
And in most cases, I feel like they should cakewalk to the finals at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If the LeBron-Luka trade never happened, I feel like they are easily the favorites.
Easily.
Not even a question. Easily. But at this point, I have to have my skepticism with a LeBron and Luka-led Lakers team at this point.
And what would scare me as a Cavs fan and what would make them, in my mind, a narrow underdog to Oklahoma City is that my guess is at the end of the day, Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren are good enough in that 2-3 role offensively. Right. Defense takes care of the rest. I would have Oklahoma City as a narrow favorite over the Cavs. I have the Cavs as a narrow favorite over the Lakers in the finals because, again, when you're talking about, you know, top heaviness versus depth, it's two sort of diametrically opposed type scenarios here. And when you're getting to the end of June, I think that that's where that could kind of come into play. So any kind of sense from you on how the finals might shake out?
I mean, I feel like, and I've said this off already, I feel like we're destined at this point for a Cleveland Lakers final. And it's going to be really interesting. It's going to go 7 no matter what at that point. So, and again, we've seen this in the league too. Like, again, this is not, you know, anything outside of the realm of impossibility, which is, I don't think the league wants to see a Cleveland OKC final. I don't think that's ideal for the league at the end of the day. So,
no.
I also feel like this, we all know too, LeBron's on the back half of his career.
Yeah.
It's probably his best opportunity to get back to the finals. And we also, to be fair, Rick, we also do not know if LeBron is going to play in next season. We don't know that yet. We assume it he will, but is it very possible he wins another ring and decides to just retire on the spot and just let Luka usher in the new year, the new era of the Lakers? But again, it's going both of the, I feel like we've seen recently, Rick, where the last couple of seasons, the Western Conference and Eastern Conference finals have been kind of let downs in terms of style of play and how interesting those games have been. But I feel like we're going to see a fantastic conference finals in either conference at this point.
Yeah, I think so. And this is where I think I kind of made the same statement about the NFL playoffs. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but I was looking at it and it was like the first round or two is really going to kind of suck. But when you get down to the concentrated kind of teams at the end here, then it's going to get really good. And I kind of feel like, and again, some of the early round matchups, like, they're going to be like Milwaukee, Indiana is going to be awesome. And like I said, selfishly, I hope it goes 7. But it's like, you know, there's not any real stakes attached to it. So it's like, if you can watch something as like, okay, they're competing to make it to the second round. But it's like, you know, if you're thinking that it's going to amount to anything more than that, you're probably going to be disappointed. So it depends on the prism that you kind of view it through. If you can view these things as isolated series, let me look at some of the ones that I'm picking here for, you know, like Lakers, Minnesota. I think that that matchup there is going to be like, that's going to be a fun series. And that actually would be very consequential if Minnesota could pull the upset, which I don't see happening. I've got the Lakers winning in 6. Even Clippers, Denver, even for as much as Denver's had their foot on the banana peel, I think they can extend that to a 6-game series and make it pretty fun and entertaining along the way. So, but in terms of the real stakes, that's where if you don't get something, and in the Western Conference, you do have the potential here. As good as Minnesota is, there's a non-zero chance, better than a non-zero chance, they can get past the Lakers. I don't think they will, but it's not like Cleveland and Boston that appear to have buys to the Eastern Conference Finals. In the Western Conference, that's the difference, is that even the top teams are going to be challenged substantially on the way there. You and I both think it's going to be the Lakers and OKC at the end of the day, but there is not that level of inevitability for either team that there is in the Eastern Conference, or so it seems.
Right, and I'm not going to rule out in the East, especially some of these teams like Orlando or Atlanta or even the Chicago Bulls, who could potentially get into the 8th seed, could cause some problems for some teams because they're really good young basketball teams. It's just perceptionally, like we discussed this, a 7-game playoff series is different than a 1-off regular season game. So,
right. Yeah. And that's where it gets to be fun and interesting. But always fun and interesting breaking it down with you, my man, Ben Chu, our NBA hoops analyst supreme. Thank you so much for being here, buddy. I look forward to breaking down the finals subsequently and the season as a whole. Thank you, as always, my man.
I appreciate it, man. Hopefully we can I can continue my finals streak.
Yeah, yeah. You have 10 years in a row of picking the finals in an accurate fashion, 10-0 over that period of time. And I believe I think I'm 7-3. I'm either 7-3 or 8-2. I'm going to say 7-3 to be on the safe side. I would otherwise be regarded as somebody doing very, very well, but not compared to the 10-0 guy here. So we'll see if you can make it 11 when it gets to that point in time. And I'll look forward to that when we reach that point in time. Thank you so much, Ben Chu. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1823.